This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
What's going on, guys? Welcome to the show. Welcome back to another episode of Action Movie Anatomy. We may be a week late, but it's just given us one more week to appreciate it. We're here to break down Wonder Woman, the most badass woman ever to be on screen. Is that the case? We're going to talk about it right now. We got Roxy Stryer here joining us. We'll see you guys in just one second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom! What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the show! Yes!
Yes!
We're here, guys. The movie was so good that we missed it the first week and had to do it anyway. Even though we're a week late, it was so good we just had to do it. We could not miss the movie. So, guys, it's Action Movie Anatomy here on a Wednesday afternoon. We're back. It's the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network dedicated to talking pop culture by the bucketful. We've got Roxy Stryer in the house.
Woo-hoo! She's back.
What did I do to piss you guys off so much? You haven't invited me in like a year and a half to this show.
Yeah, I don't know what you did.
We don't want to talk. It's because...
Let's not bring it up again. It was Chumbawamba, wasn't it?
It was the Chumbawamba combination with how much you made me sweat the first time you came on the show.
Yeah,
we needed a break.
You got edged out.
Oh, yep. Remember that one.
It's an inside joke, guys.
It's not a good one.
It's an inside joke with the guys.
Yeah, go watch Andrew sweat. You'll remember. Welcome back, Roxy Stryer. Where can the folks find you?
Everywhere at Roxy Stryer.
And you guys
I was just going to say, if you guys don't know it, she hosts a show called DC Movie News every single week. She's literally been talking about this movie for how many months?
It's actually so sad because we have had, since we started the show, we've been doing the show for 2 years. We've had 3 films come out in 2 years. So, like, we milk it for all it's worth. We've been talking about this show for a year and a half.
This is like your 19th appearance talking about Wonder Woman in the last week, right?
But I'm really excited about it because since then, I've seen it again. Yeah. So I have new stuff to talk about.
It's sick.
Yeah, and you and Mike, we do our unproduced table read show together. And, like, when they came on Friday after watching it for the first time, it was like a triumph. Oh. Like, you guys had conquered something great.
He, like, lifted me up and spun
He's
me
like,
around.
We did it.
Oh, I feel like we did. We helped.
Yeah. You probably did, and that's why we wanted you on the show, is because, like, you guys are pros. Ben and I are... We've just started to put more and more superhero movies in our catalog.
Yeah.
Because they're great, and they're some of the greatest action scenes ever.
Absolutely. And I went and saw this, and I was like, we're doing this on the show. We have to do it on the show. And you hadn't seen it yet.
Right. You're like Diana, and I'm like Steve Trevor, and you're like that guy that can't shoot.
I'm sorry. Why did he just get bashed?
It's true, though, because... which guy can't shoot? The
guy with PTSD.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Right.
Oh, but he's a good
guy. He's got a sweet accent.
But he's a good guy.
Yeah.
Andrew, where can the folks find you?
Oh, yeah. You guys can find me at Andrew Guy on Instagram and Twitter.
If anything, he's the guy that wants to be an actor, but he can't because he's the wrong color.
Oh, yeah. It's a strong point.
Thank you,
it's
Roxy.
A strong You're welcome. Point. But you can because 2017, yo.
Yeah, that's exactly. Right. Guys, my name is Ben Bateman. You can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter or Instagram. And let's get into the show, guys. Let's talk Wonder Woman. This movie was fucking epic. This movie was amazing.
It was incredible. My whole family is going to be watching the show this week because they all went and saw it and just loved it. And I was raised by 4 women, so of course they loved it. And my mom surprised my sister yesterday to go see it, and they just blew up my phone, just like blown away. And I was like, I know! Everything was so... I like kept talking to them. They're like, okay... That's enough.
Awesome. Yeah.
And then your mom wouldn't get you anymore, so she got on the Facebook fan page and she started posting about it.
Wait, that's really cool that you guys have that Facebook fan page that's been going on, though.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
A couple of our fans, amazing fans, decided to start it, and they were like, if it's just like 5 of us talking, and there's like now like over 100 people in it, everybody, we like interact all the time because like literally everything that gets posted, it's like a group mind of Andrew and I.
Yeah.
They're like such and such thing. Like somebody referred to it the other day as like basically the Tom Cruise Mecca. And like
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Anyway, guys. guys, yeah, we have a Facebook fan page, and of course there's a Twitter as well, at AMA Podcast. You can follow along with there, which we, you know, it's been growing, and we post sometimes, though the Facebook page, honestly, is more active.
It's very, very interactive.
So, guys, this is an action movie show, and you may be wondering, if you have not watched in a while, why we're covering a superhero film. It's because this is episode 103.
Yep, we've had a guest on for all 100-plus episodes.
Yeah.
Episodes plus 100,
which
is cool.
We've been doing guests again, which we did more in the early days, and the reason that we are doing a superhero film is that we're now kind of expanding outside of our very myopic view of what we were going to do on the show, and we're trying to invite sort of other genres that are still within this genre of action-y things, and how could you not want to cover this movie? This summer is full of movies that look unbelievable.
Totally. It would feel wrong for us as a show to not cover such a great film for our fans.
Yeah, exactly.
And for us. It's selfish.
So, anyway, guys, there are four rules to the action movies that we do on the show. Rule number one, the hero always plays by their own rules. I mean, she definitely plays by their own rules. Nobody tells her what to do.
I think she even says that at one point.
Yeah. It's super interesting because it's the whole time you're, like, watching this god be contained by mere mortals. And they're, like, just telling her, like, no, you can't.
Yeah.
Finally, she's like, no, I'm just going to do this thing.
It's kind of wild to think about the fact that now, between this, Edge of Tomorrow, and Mad Max Fury Road, there are three examples of women just being like, no, male counterpart, I'm going to run the show and do exactly what I want to do. And they're three of the best, probably, 10 movies we've done on the show? 20, maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, hard to say when some of the movies we've done are, like, all-time classics, but, like, definitely some of the greatest films we've done on the show. And all three of them have a woman basically, like, saying to the guy, like, no, Tom Cruise, I know better than you. Or, like, sorry, Tom Hardy, I run the show with one hand.
Yeah. Well, it's new. But it's, I think it's new, which is why you guys like it so much. We haven't seen it before.
Yeah, yeah, and another thing that we talk about all the time is, like, how hard these movies have to work when you have a female lead, when you have an all-ethnic cast and all that. And it's, like, the movies that stand out with female leads on our show, it's crazy. There's only been, like, six of them.
Right.
And they are some of the six greatest action or adventure movies of all time because I feel like, it's just like Patty Jenkins says in her interviews, it's like she knew she had to do more for everything that comes after this film. You know, and that's, I think that's why every time you see Ripley, anytime Uma did anything, like, they're doing this for everyone coming after them.
Right, absolutely. Rule number two, the hero and the villain are always the smartest people in the room. So it's funny because, like, she's the smartest, but she's also naive in a lot of ways to the way the world works. So she doesn't qualify in your normal, like, I've got the ace up my sleeve the entire time, even though I've been gaming you. It's like she just happens to be a god, so even if she's wrong, it doesn't matter. She's not going to really die. I mean, she is smarter because she's better than everyone, but, like, not in your traditional, like, guy with a gun outsmarts the guys, the terrorists version.
She's not as knowledgeable, but she's the smartest, for sure.
Yeah, she's the smartest. She's the truest. And it's like, so that's going to, like, her means, or, like, the reason she's doing everything is always going to be, she's going to get to the right place. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That was, like, hard for me to say.
Yeah, definitely. And the villain, for sure, is the smartest in the room.
Yeah, Ares. Yeah. He runs the game the whole time. Rule number three, the movie is driven by police, military, political, or mercenary figure. Nope, she's a god. So there's
she's a military, she's an Amazonian warrior.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. That's a fair point.
And there's a lot of military and political figures in the film. So yeah. Even though it's not
Steve Trevor.
Yeah. He's the male lead, and he is A spy.
Rule number four, the movie contains a minimum of one explosion. Definitely.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of explosions.
Would you call the first time she crosses her arm an explosion?
Yeah, definitely.
Right? That's so awesome.
In my heart.
Yeah.
That was also super, super sick moment.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
What?
No, I heard it. We heard it.
Mm-hmm.
I was worried she was going to kill her.
Yeah.
I thought that was, like, what was going to happen, and that was going to kind of be, like, why she hated battle or something. I don't know, but it was awesome.
Yeah. That scene was incredible. The first 40 minutes of this movie had me, like, teary-eyed, like, three or four times. Like several times. Like, that moment, the big battle on the beach. Like, there was a lot of moments that were just like, wow. Like, there's just something about this, the way this is framed, the music, all of it is just so, like, powerful.
It was kind of bizarre because I cried at the exact same moments the second time as I did it the first time.
I feel like I would do that, too. Okay, so what are your moments?
Well,
do you remember them specifically?
Definitely the first time that we saw all of the women fighting each other, I just started crying. I was like, wow, this is so cool.
Yeah, right.
I got a couple cheers in the audience, too, like, when I saw, because it was just, like, that island, not only was it, like, beautiful,
yeah,
and they're
right.
all beautiful, but you're like, every single one of them could destroy me.
Yeah.
It was so cool.
I mean, that's, I think, the concept behind the invention of the character Wonder Woman was just like, all right, like, we're going to have all these beautiful, strong women living in this, like, other culture where, like, every woman is the most beautiful woman on Earth, and every woman is the fiercest warrior, and, like, they don't know any different. That's what women are to them, and there's only women. And it's, like,
That was cool.
It's wild to see it on screen, right?
I had a lot of moments, but we'll talk about them throughout.
Okay, yeah, sure.
For sure. So, guys, the way we start the show off is we do something called thesis statements. We share a thought, a bold statement, and usually we watch the trailer first. Do we have the trailer queued up, actually? I forgot to check. Oh, we do have the trailer queued up. Wonderful.
Yes.
Excellent. Let's watch the trailer.
Okay. Wonderful.
Excellent. Thank you.
No, because like Wonder Woman.
I got you.
Okay.
Excellent.
No.
You get it.
I used to want to save the world.
God, I love her.
This beautiful place.
This part of it, IMDb quotes, has it as Hippolyta saying
but
it.
But the closer you
wrong,
get.
Sir.
Oh, really?
The more you see the great darkness within.
Yeah.
I learned this the hard way a long, long time ago.
That moment of
what
the
is
beach
your mission?
Was so
to stop
beautiful.
The war.
What war?
The war to end all wars.
Weapons far deadlier than you can ever imagine.
The war can be ours.
This movie was so good. I want to watch it now.
You are in more danger than you think.
I cannot stand by while innocent lives are lost.
Be careful, Diana.
Who is this woman?
She's my secretary,
sir.
She's a very good secretary.
It is our sacred duty to defend the world, and it's what I'm going to do.
Oh my God, that moment. Oh my God, yeah.
We use our principles, although I am not opposed to engaging in a bit of fisticuffs should the occasion arise.
That chick's awesome. Here's a question. Is that trailer as good as it is because we've seen the movie, so the moments ring truer?
Better.
Or is it
better than it was?
Because I don't remember the trailer super well. I watched it a couple times, but not extensively.
So they released three trailers, and they released a TV cut trailer, all of which I probably watched 1,500 times before the movie, obviously, because that's my job on Easy Movie News. And I really enjoyed that trailer the entire time.
Yeah.
After the movie, it was even better.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
because I feel like they picked the perfect moments, and they told the story without revealing who Ares was, without giving us some of the craziest moments. I have heard some complaints about the trailer, about that it did show a little too much of No Man's Land, and that ruined it for some people. But for me, that's how you get people to the movies.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, and then, the moment in the trailer when she says it's our sworn duty and it's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. I got chills. And the thing is, if you've seen the movie, that there's no way that can take away from No Man's Land, because No Man's Land is like
epic,
a million times what you're seeing right there.
Yeah,
you know.
Totally.
And when you see her walking out for No Man's Land, and she goes like that and reflects the bullet, it doesn't show the scene after that where she holds her shield and it vibrates as she's doing it. You know, that's more powerful for me, like not showing everything.
Yeah,
I can't explain this feeling that I got while watching the trailer. And while watching the film, it's just like, it must be like female empowerment or something. I can't even express like what it is that I feel while watching the movie.
I totally agree with
where
you.
I'm just like, fuck yeah.
I totally agree with you.
You know? It's in a total different way than most action movies.
It's when, completely different. When she says that line and he screams after her, Diana, I don't know what it is, but it's something like, you're looking and you're like, you're such a great hero. It's like what I'm feeling. I'm like, you're such a great fucking hero.
And you're like, no one knows what you're capable of except for us. You know, and
totally.
you don't even know, and
and the fact that she says that, like, it's my sworn duty, but it's also like, I think a lot of it has to do with what you're talking about, this like female empowerment side of it, because it's not, it's like he yells after her, Diana, like as though it's his duty to protect her, when it's like there's no chance he'd be able to anyway, and she's too naive to even realize that she could probably actually be killed, but she's not going to be afraid. She has no fear.
Yeah, that's right. Her duty. And yeah, I don't know.
I think that all of that is kind of encompassed by when she's in Paradise Island, when she's in Themyscira, and she says, "What will I be if I stay?"
Yeah.
Every time she makes the choice to go, every time she's like, "No, I'm going to go defeat this person, or I'm going to cross no man's land, or I'm going to do this."
Right.
Because what will she be if she doesn't? She won't be Wonder Woman.
She won't be anything, yeah.
So I think that that embodied the entire film.
Yeah, I'm like actually pretty shocked at how like emotional even watching the trailer got me.
Me too. I want to cry right now. Yeah. I feel. Let's talk about thesis. Fuck.
All right. So thesis statement, guys. Again, it's that moment we watch the film. It comes up at a party. You get into a conversation. You just want to say to someone like, "Well, this is the thing about Wonder Woman," and it's the point that you're going to hold on to all throughout that conversation. It's bold. It should be almost like rooted in hyperbole. The greatest this, the only this, the first this, never. This is my favorite. I mean, unless it is my favorite movie of all time, which I guess. It's a pretty fair thesis statement, though it's still pretty personal.
Yeah, that's pretty big. That's a bold, bold statement.
Yeah, and it should be presented almost as fact. Who wants to start with their thesis statement?
You guys both just looked at me, so I feel like you want me to start.
I want you to go.
I mean, you're
pretty
much
Wonder Genius.
Woman, so.
Yeah, you are.
That's what they call me. Oh, no.
You didn't wear the crown. I was going to say, I didn't want to say anything because I thought there was a reason why.
I just realized, man. What a bummer.
Cut the tape.
Okay, so my thesis statement is that Wonder Woman, both the movie and the character, are the most iconic character and movie. The most impactful character and movie of the 2000s so far. So it's both the most impactful movie and character of the 2000s so far.
The 2000s. Not 2010s.
The 2000s.
Wow.
That's a big, big statement.
17 years.
In the last 17 years, this is the most impactful character and movie.
Impactful. Not impactful. Important, not impactful. Influential. Yeah, impactful.
Yeah.
That's
because I think it impacts both the future of film.
Mm-hmm.
It impacts the most amount of human beings. It impacts the way that little girls grow up. I mean, the fact that when Ben and I went and saw the movie the second time I was seeing it, we watched this little girl wait in line to go to this photo booth so that she could just stand there like this and stand with Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
I didn't have that growing up.
Yeah.
And I think that that changes the fact that you can look up to somebody, that she is good, that we're not talking about Harley Quinn right now. It's very
impactful.
Yeah,
she's not sexualized in any way. And also, I love that she has an accent.
Yeah.
And it means
amazing.
That these kind of movies can make money, which is impactful, too, because it will change the wave of the future in film.
Yeah. And no shade thrown at Margot Robbie or the character of Harley Quinn.
Of course not. That's her character.
And she's one of the best parts of that movie, one of the only really great parts of that movie.
Yeah.
But it's completely different. It's not... It is sexualized. That's a
you
lot
You don't
of
want your daughter to grow up to be Harley Quinn.
No.
You want your daughter to grow up to be Wonder Woman.
And
it's
I don't
different.
Think that film or that character has the impact.
Not
that
even
this
close.
No, not
so
at all.
I think that of the last 17 years, this will be the most impactful film.
Well, it's funny because on Saturday for your birthday, we all went out, and and a lot of people there, people in our industry, are in this. So what the hell do you think we talked about? A lot. We just debated movies and stuff. And and one thing I said was that I think that this is the second most important superhero movie that's ever been made, or actually, excuse me, that has come out past when the universe has got reinvented. You know, when Iron Man and
sure,
those movies started coming out.
So basically,
like the new Batman,
so
like 2000s, basically.
In the last decade, is what you're saying?
Since DCEU and the MCU.
Even since 2000, I would say.
Okay.
From that point on.
Modern era.
Yeah, I think that Batman Begins was the most important. I always say that. But I think that this was the second most important. I do think that this is by far the most impactful character, though.
Yeah.
Like, by a mile.
Yeah, you said that, and I started trying to think, in the last 20, basically 20 years, just shy of, would there be a more impactful movie character? And ones, because literally, to even argue the point, you get into, like, an upper echelon of, like, there has to be, like, okay, so, like, let's say Heath Ledger's Joker, and it's largely, in a lot of ways, because Ledger died. So, it's iconic on a whole other level than it just would have been.
Mm-hmm.
It gets elevated into that stratosphere.
Emotional, but I don't know about impactful.
Yeah,
yeah.
It wasn't, like, because of that, now everything's different.
No, I would say, definitely behind, but I'm saying it's, like, that level. You have to be on that level if you're going to enter the conversation.
Yeah, but I don't even think it's just the character. Like I said, it's also the movie.
Yeah.
Because of how this is going to change movies going forward.
Yeah.
And also the character.
Yeah, I'm trying to think like pictures, movies that won Best Picture, who the lead character was.
I understand what you're saying is there has to be like this massive, massive recognition from other.
Yeah.
Not just like that's a great character. It needed to win awards. It needed to be recognized as a movie that was changed everything, which this movie is going to be
I don't think it can be another superhero character because we already, and before the 17 years, we had Superman, we had Batman, and we also had different iterations of them throughout. So I feel like, I mean, who's a bigger superhero character? And then when you break out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I think I agree with the thesis. That's a huge thesis that goes far beyond what I was like, had even like opened my mind up to really proclaiming, but I think that's right.
I can't think of anything.
Yeah. I can't think of a movie or character.
It's interesting because of like, because a lot of the movies that like you think of.
Thumping.
No. I don't know. I can't think about it. I can't. I think if Black Panther might have come out before this, that might be. I mean, who knows how that's going to be?
Sure.
But that's going to be a huge, impactful character. Like seeing that superhero.
Some people might say for a movie, they might say Moonlight because of everything.
People have a lot
how that's impacted
affection for that movie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I mean, even when you think about the cornerstone films, I guess that have made the most impact in one way or another. Take like Avatar as a good example of a movie, you know, reinvented technology, highest grossing. It's not even in the same, like...
It doesn't make you feel anything.
Yeah, it makes you exactly. It's totally irrelevant. Or Titanic or something like that. It's longer than 17 years.
But. Rox always does this when she comes on the show.
Yeah, if only she had a song, she could connect it to.
I kind of stumbled over it, though. I'm so bummed I had been working on it.
No,
impactful.
No, I think that's good. A very important differentiation to make. And I think that you stumbled on it is good because you talked about both. And impactful is very different. So mine...
It is. I had it written down, so I'm not lying about it.
I believe you.
Okay, cool.
Mine is that it's so tough because I think the dynamic between the two of them and Steve Harvey playing the damsel in distress the way he does, essentially.
Steve Harvey in this role would be unbelievable.
It's like a whole new meaning on the Cage versus Cruz.
As soon as I said it, I was like, something is very wrong.
Something
with
is
that
wrong.
Sentence I just said. Steve Trevor. Yeah. Him as the damsel in distress, but he's like always looking out for her.
Yeah.
But I don't know how to explain their relationship together is one of the greatest, I think, two people ever on screen, their relationships.
Well, Roxy in the theater, pointed out to me, I won't ruin it, but she definitely pointed out to me, she's like, this is my favorite scene, and it's one of their two scenes together.
Yeah.
It doesn't have anything, we don't have that question.
I didn't know if you were going to use it later, but yeah, it's that scene when they're in the boat together.
Yeah, that's so good.
Yeah.
I could have watched it forever.
Yeah, me too, because he's such a, he's so bumbling and nervous, and it's amazing.
And charming, but he's also, kind of a gentleman about it, and she's like... Yeah, she's totally leading the dance the whole movie, which is great.
Yeah, she's always leading. That's exactly it. And so my thesis is that this movie has the greatest moment in any DC film ever.
Yeah.
And that is when you can hear the other half of the conversation that you couldn't hear right after Diana got stunned. And it's him saying that he's going to go, and she's like, no, whatever it is you need to do, I can do it.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, I can do it. You don't need to go. And then he's, it's just that... I just love that she's like taking care of him, even in that moment when she's like fighting a god,
right,
getting her ass kicked. She's like, I can do whatever you need me to do. I can do it. And then the line where he's like, no, I save today, you save the world.
Yeah.
Is just, oh my God, that moment. And then he says, I wish we had more time.
Yeah.
Which is the greatest. Like, I want to cry just saying that.
Yeah.
It really, really upsets me, though, that he was able to say, I love you, and she was so, couldn't hear, couldn't say it back. That just, crushes my soul. Well, I kind of wish that she said it when she was putting these pieces together, and she was wrapped in the metal, and she's laying there, and she sees it explode. I kind of wish she, whispered, I love you.
Right.
Even though he couldn't hear, so that I knew that she did.
Yeah.
I know.
I needed that.
That whole moment, you're just like, no!
Yeah, right. It's hard. It's a lot. What it reminds me of in a lot of ways is the relationship between Aragorn and
somebody else in Lord of the Rings.
Eowyn?
Yes.
Liv Tyler?
Yeah, because he's mortal, and she's not. And there's that feeling where he's like, I'm going to get old, and you're not. Kind of a thing.
Yeah.
She's like, I'll become immortal with you. And it's like, you're like, with her, you're like, well, Steve Trevor is like this mortal guy. He's like just this soldier and you're a god, but you love him. You truly love him. And you would have given anything that just to like have this guy, this mortal soldier.
And I also love that I think that he knows that he would just get in her way for the rest of her life.
Right.
Or his life.
Yeah, and it's kind of fascinating, too, because we know that the next time we see Wonder Woman is over 100 years later.
Yeah.
And we know that he's a man, so he wouldn't have made it.
Yep.
Yeah.
But we still are devastated that he dies, even though we would have never seen him again anyway.
Yeah. I know. It's crazy, too, to think about the fact.
That's such an interesting point.
It's like one of the most beautiful parts of the story and why it's such a good script is that it's one of these things where it's like a movie, like a road trip movie, where the characters get to be together for a couple days, but they live so much life in those few days. And I love those stories.
It's just the classic Terminator story.
Yeah,
you know, you fall in love. It's predetermined already, but yeah, you love it. It's perfect. It's written perfectly.
Yeah. So my thesis statement is about the director. It's about Patty Jenkins. And my thesis statement is that Patty Jenkins is the most relevant director. The most relevant living female director. And I say this because of the fact that Patty Jenkins has done two films in her career. She will make her next movie, whether it's a DC movie or she makes another movie. I don't know if you know this, if she's slated to direct something already.
She's talked about directing Wonder Woman 2 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Contractually, DC, if you are a first-time director, they do not give you more than one movie. Hmm. They do not sign you on to multiple pictures. So they didn't. They signed her on to one, which means they're coming back to the table relatively soon.
Yeah.
Which we know that DC wants her. We know that she wants in. Which puts her in a very good position.
Yeah.
Because she could essentially ask for an arm and a leg right now, and I think Geoff Johns and Charles Roven would rip off their arm and their leg
literally.
And hand it to her and say, like, here you go, is this good enough? So she has talked about Wonder Woman 2. She's talked about it making it contemporary, not doing it, because I know a lot of people wanted a World War II or a 60s or something. Mm. She talked about doing it like that. She wants to do a contemporary piece, but they have not actually pulled her in yet.
So the reason I say it is because if you look at her career, this is a woman who has made two movies in her
career.
You
said relevant director. The most relevant female director now.
That's living.
Living, yeah. Okay. Relevant living female director. And it's because 2003 she directs Monster, which wins the Academy Award for Best Actress. Mm-hmm. She directs Charlize Theron to this iconic Roxy, as you said before the show started, your single favorite performance of all time.
It is one of the most incredible performances ever.
Yeah, it's iconic. It sticks with everybody. It's harrowing, completely different kind of movie than this too, like a very dark indie movie. And that was her directorial debut.
Yeah, she wrote and directed that.
She was slated to direct this film in 2005. It fell apart. She didn't end up doing it. She had said she always wanted to do it. She only would do it the right way. She was slated to do Thor Ragnarok. She decided not to do that film. So she does this. I mean, as we said, she directed what is being regarded right now as like the most impactful or one of the most impactful films of its time, a very important movie, a movie that completely changes the game, the fact that it's a movie about a woman, that she's a woman directing it, and the fact that the last time she directed a movie, it was this cornerstone film in a totally different genre that won one of the greatest living actresses an Oscar.
And it, again, was about a woman just trying to survive in this world.
Yeah. And
like, in the weirdest juxtaposition, you know?
Yeah.
And thinking about it, like, the world is hers right now. The next movie this woman makes is... I mean, I hate to use the comparison of James Cameron because it's a ridiculous comparison because he's James Cameron.
Right.
But in the sense that she took 13 years between movies and she did this, what is she going to do next? You know, even Catherine Bigelow, who I'm obsessed with, and I think she's unbelievable. And I think, like,
I was just waiting for you to get to that point.
Detroit.
That's what I've been wanting to ask you this whole time is about her.
You know, I love Point Break.
Yeah, absolutely.
Near Dark's a classic. I mean, obviously Zero Dark Thirty and The Hurt Locker are amazing films. Detroit looks like it's going to be unbelievable. But
I understand it's in a different light.
It's just different. She's made movies that are... She made K-19 The Widowmaker. She's made movies that are like, whatever. She made Strange Days. This movie's made two movies, and it's these two movies. It's crazy.
What's interesting about that, though, is that initially this was Michelle McLaren's project before she was kicked off of it because of creative differences. And I wonder, had she made this film, would Michelle McLaren have been the most relevant person? Would that have been the same thesis?
What did Michelle McLaren do before?
Game of Thrones, a bunch of different TV, like... Breaking Bad, I'm pretty sure. Big TV things, but I don't know if she's done a big feature.
Big movie?
Do you know, like, what the differences were specifically? Did they ever
the creative
really
differences?
It?
No. No, they said that they just weren't agreeing on it.
Yeah.
For me, the reason that it stands out is it's not even so much the fact that it's two great movies. It's the fact that the kind of movie Monster is versus the kind of movie Wonder Woman is.
It shows she can do anything.
Different animal. And the fact that they're so far removed from one another, but she still made this incredibly relevant film. She's still young. You know what I mean? It's not like she was 55 when she made the first one and she's pushing 70. She's like in her prime as a creative person
right
now.
Yeah, what is she, like 45?
Yeah, and she's in her 40s.
It's incredible.
So I'm pretty impressed, and I'm really looking forward to her next film, and I thought this movie was amazing. Let's move into our next part of the show, guys. This is called Fist Pump Moment. It's that moment in the movie something happens, and you're just like, yes, this is so good. I get to watch the rest of this movie. You like look around the theater. You look around the couch. Are you seeing this right now?
Like, want someone else in the theater to have that moment with you.
You walk out of the theater, and you literally immediately call someone, and you're like, did you see the movie? Oh, my God, that part. You just want to relive it every second. That's Fist Pump Moment. Can be anything. Can be a line, a look, a song, a sound, whatever. And yeah, the music is close,
so
for
close,
me.
So right?
The music's unbelievable. I'm going to jump in first on this.
Yeah, please.
And it's actually not a gal moment. And I don't know why this moment even stuck with me so much, because I saw it in the trailer. But it's the Robin Wright moment when she says "shield" in the battle scene on the beach, and she runs and she jumps off the shield,
yeah,
and she does the triple arrow move.
Mm-hmm.
It was so, so sick. She's like, remember we had that conversation the other day about Rachel Weisz on the Mummy episode,
yeah,
about how she had aged better than Brendan Fraser. Oh. I think Robin Wright, it's because Alex Kessler, my buddy, said the same
she's
thing.
She's incredible.
Princess Bride, Cary Elwes versus Robin Wright. Robin Wright kicks the shit out of Cary Elwes.
Yeah.
She looks...
Yeah.
Yeah. She looks unbelievable. She has that sick scar.
Yeah, she's even got like the obliques. Like, yeah. She's incredible. And I also love in that moment, again, it's just like Steve Harvey.
Yeah.
Steve's Trevor is like, because they use it later on to boost her up to the tower. He's just always watching and just observing and like just trying to keep up.
Yeah.
And trying to, I love that.
That's
love
my
it.
Fist pump moment.
Really?
Which is why it's so funny when Steve Trevor says shield,
oh,
and
sick.
Diana does it and she brings down the entire frickin' building.
Yeah.
It's my fist pump moment because she was amazing and it was about her, but he was listening.
Yeah, exactly.
And he was observing and he knew what to do, and he didn't think in that moment he could defeat them, and he knew she could, and
right.
He knew how. So it showed a lot about his character, and then it just showed that she's not going to take him down. She's going to take down the whole freaking building.
Exactly.
It was so cool.
Exactly. Because when she goes up, you're like, oh, she's going to like go through the window and he's going to like blow out the other side.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
The whole damn building is going to blow up.
Though the moment that she kicks the guy through the building, she knees the guy, was another like
awesome.
Really,
super
really
awesome.
Sick moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at the end of it, when she stands up there and everybody's looking up at her, and it was like, oh my God, that's a woman standing up there.
Yeah.
Like, and it's Wonder Woman, but also it's just a woman.
Yeah.
That was so cool for me.
I was glad that they didn't change, like, they changed her costume to make it a little bit more, like, modern and awesome, but I was glad they didn't pull, like, a 2000 X-Men and give her, like, something, I don't know, more like a cat suit or something stupid like that.
I know,
like,
what you mean.
Like latexy.
Yeah, something that just, like, changed the look, because, you know, she wears, like, a little tunic, and, like, it's obviously, like, a very antiquated look.
Yep.
But I was glad they completely stuck with it from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, that comes from BVS, right? It's the same costume, or does she have a different costume?
That's later on. Yeah, there are a couple different changes to it, but the same way that they make changes to everybody.
Right.
To all the people, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's got to be a different sword. Because we watched that melt the F down.
Right.
So, yeah, that
looks like the same sword.
That's my fist pump.
Oh, man. There's so many of those sweet moments of her, like, seeing the baby for the first time and just, like,
awesome.
Insisting that you're just
a
like,
baby.
Oh, I love you. And
the
like,
ice cream, yeah.
And even just her walking through, just, like, seeing war.
Yeah.
Just her face is almost like a fist pump, because she can just see there's so much hurt in it. It's
yeah.
Just, it's beautiful. But it's no man's land. It's that moment she's like, no, man. You've been...
Yeah,
you've been telling me no for since the first time I met you, and right now I just can't. I can't. This woman, her and I, like, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And then she takes off the cowl and the robe, and she's in the gear and the music, and she gets up there, and she's stunning. And then she's just the biggest badass I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Ever.
She says the line in the trailer. She says, "No, this is what I'm going to do."
And my heart like stopped when she said that again.
Yeah, it was definitely one of those. And the music is swelling in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean when I was watching the trailer and I said, "What is it that makes her so incredible?" It's that moment where you're watching. You're like, "You're such a hero."
Yeah.
You're such a hero. Like, I love those moments. Those are the moments that I live for. That's Luke. That's no, I'm a Jedi like my father.
Yeah.
That's why
true.
That's always been my moment in that movie. Is like it's those defiant moments where it doesn't matter, this is I'm gonna do the right thing. And think about when you're a little kid, how much those moments those moments mean to you. That little girl we were talking about that was taking the picture, I imagine all she wants to do is be Wonder Woman.
I can't even imagine how amazing that must feel for her. Because I was the same way when I saw Batman as a kid. I went home and my mom made me a cape out of like an old sheet with
right.
a button. She sewed it that night.
Right.
We couldn't go to the store, and it was like that's all I ever wanted to be.
Yeah.
And, like, all I want to be as a 29-year-old man is Wonder Woman now. Like, that's all I want to be.
That's awesome. Impactful.
Yeah.
Huge. Huge. All right. So, speaking of those moments, should we discuss maybe some of the greatest moments in DC's history?
I feel like I'm going to cry this whole show for some reason.
I know what you mean. I felt that way since I saw it. Mm.
This movie was full of amazing moments, and unfortunately for like, DC on the whole, their moments have been spread out over 40 years in a much more dispersed fashion, where Marvel has had, like, all these incredible moments in the last, like, 10.
Yeah. It's also tough because, like, what films look like then is not even close to what films look like now, and that can take away from moments while it might be one of the greatest moments at the time, later on, it's like, ooh, that's a little goofy.
Well, that's why I think, so thinking about some of the most classic DC moments, so, like, Superman in the first Superman, him flying and flying around with Lois is like that's like an all-time, think about 1978.
Right.
Somebody flew. They made somebody fly.
Yeah. That was the whole tagline of the film, but I think that while it is one of the biggest moments in movie history, I think that if you showed that to a 12-year-old kid today, and you were like, this is one of the greatest moments of DC, they would be like, this looks weird. Lame. It doesn't even look like it's flying or anything. So it's hard to call it one of the best, although it is one of the most important, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's 78. You jump forward on DC pretty far after that. I would say
maybe Batman, like the first time he kind of drops down from the ceiling, or even when he says, I'm Batman.
I was thinking in 89 Batman, I'm Batman's an all-time moment for people, but honestly, I think probably the scene in that movie that has always stuck with me the most of any of the scenes, it's the art gallery scene with Joker.
Yeah,
it's the boombox. It's gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
People say that. Yeah. I think that is a good one.
It's the classic. It's a classic scene, and
I'll always remember when the Penguin bites the nose off the dude and Batman returns. I think it's just because it just scared the shit out of me as a kid.
It's really scary.
Yeah, I mean, as far as and prior to really the reinvention in 2005, is there another DC movie prior to Batman Begins that has an impactful moment? Like,
what are the other DC movies?
I mean,
all the other Batmans, all the Superman sequels.
Superman Returns, I think that in Superman, what was something that was so impactful for me and stands the test of time, because I feel like they did it really well and it mattered. Number one, just because watching Brando on screen anytime is huge. But when you watch Kal-El and Jor-El interact for the first time, and it's like this Wizard of Oz moment, and he starts explaining, and it's trippy and it's weird, and we like go through space, and he's saying who he is and how he's got to be man, and you know, you can't like just be this superhero, you've got to fit in, you've got to do these things. I think that the words are so impactful that always stayed with me.
It's weird. I really do remember that scene for some reason. Well, like, the visuals of it.
It's because they've shown the clip of him standing talking in every tribute of Brando ever.
And saying Fortress of Solitude. That's like a big moment.
Right. When Brando died, that was a thing they showed. I remember in the tribute. Right. Like, that's one of his big iconic. I mean, it's basically, he probably has seven pretty iconic roles, but he has two really iconic roles. Really iconic.
Yeah.
Or three, I guess. Three.
In the tribute, it works so well because he says, if you're watching this, I've been dead for thousands of years.
Yeah.
Which is so eerie and creepy. And it's a really strong moment.
Definitely.
Other than that, nothing at Superman Returns.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's not until you get to this next run that lasts basically a decade or just over. It's weird, as good of a movie as Batman Begins actually is, and as important of a movie as that movie is, I don't think there's a single moment in Batman Begins that stands out as, like, an all-time comic book movie moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand that. I have, like, my own personal bias, the scene when Liam Neeson is talking about how he loses his great love.
Yeah.
That for some reason, that scene, them fighting out on the ice.
Yeah, right.
I really remember that. Like, it's very iconic to me. It's the first time you see him fighting Ra's al Ghul.
I don't completely
even know
agree.
It, you know?
That moment stuck with me too, and just how everything looked then. It was so cold.
So cool. Yeah.
And it's
then
a great movie.
You know, the remember, you know, always be remember
mindful
remind
of your surroundings.
Yeah, and that comes back later on. I think that's, but it's nothing like in Dark Knight.
Compared to Dark Knight, where we were just talking before the show, Dark Knight's got like, but
15.
Again, it's hard to point that one from Dark Knight where you're like, well, that's, and I have to think, because of Heath, if they were going to show...
You're legitimately saying 15, aren't you?
I mean, there are so many for me. Yeah, like, I feel like with the Heath Ledger moments alone, there's so many, and why they're so important is debatable, of course, and why they are so memorable and therefore so incredible, but I think that between the one with all three times why he when he explains how he got his scars are ridiculous, especially the one where he talks about his dad coming home. I think that one's really strong. The scene with the pen is really strong.
Yeah.
The heist moment, the interrogation.
Jumping off the building in Tokyo.
Yeah, yes. Him talking to Two-Face, like everything that's going on.
Him recording that own video of when he kills the fake Batman.
It's crazy.
Thinking
about it now, if I was going to probably put a single one that was representative of that movie, I think it would be the interrogation. So it's my favorite, but it's also the only one of the ones we're talking about that has both of the characters in it.
Yeah.
It's got Batman and the Joker, and it's them interacting, and it's the most intense scene. And when he smashes his head against the glass, and he's like laughing hysterically afterwards, that scene is just like...
And Batman can't break him.
Yeah.
Not even...
That scene is so intense and so good. Yeah, I think that one... I was also thinking, does Rises have a moment?
Yeah.
Is it the plane hanging?
That's... unbelievable. You're talking about when we get introduced to Bane?
It's incredible.
How did they shoot it? I don't understand. They're like, that's practicals. It's wild.
Christopher Nolan's a genius.
Yeah, because I remember when the movie was coming out, Nolan was saying, if you liked Dark Knight and you thought the heist was insane, wait till you see Rises. And it was like, no way.
I want to watch Rises again.
I think when he climbs out of the hole, too.
Yeah.
Just like,
that's true.
Everything, watching that.
Yeah,
that's important.
I love it because you also hear Bane's voice for the first time, and it's so weird because he's got that like echoey. I think it was ADR is what I heard because it was so hard to hear him. They went in and they ADR'd it, which is why the voice sounds so strange the whole movie. It ends up becoming a really effective tactic, actually.
Yeah.
It's very iconic, but it's like, that's why it always sounds like this, you know? And it's like...
I love it. I love it now. But I remember the first time I heard it in the movie, I was kind of like, wait, and then it took me like 10 minutes to love it.
Isn't his first line when you hear him and he goes, he might wonder why you'd shoot him perhaps before throwing him out of the plane?
Yeah.
Or something like that.
That's exactly it.
Yeah, it's amazing. That movie's sweet.
Really good.
Gotta watch that movie again. I think it's underrated.
I think it's underrated as well.
Yeah,
I love that film. Yeah, yeah. I think it just suffered because it came out after Dark Knight. What about BVS?
Yeah,
is it the tornado scene? Is it like, my son?
I think what they call the Black Zero event, which is like the when we see what happened previously in Man of Steel and all of the destruction, when we come back and we're watching Batman, he sees the little girl, he runs into it, he's watching the rays.
Awesome moment.
I think that is such a killer moment.
And that was a great moment I remember from the trailer, from BVS. Yeah. That's like, 100%. Like, that's the moment in the trailer that I was so excited for BVS because it really gives you the sense of
why.
Yeah, it tells the story. And that's the most important part about that movie is you have to understand why Batman is so afraid and why he feels it's so necessary to take down Superman. And that's an awesome moment. Like, he's just a man saving a little girl. He's a billionaire in his city saving a little girl at the time.
Yeah, and I think that's honestly maybe one of the best moments of the whole film. I think it might be the best moment of the movie because it is done so masterfully. It's so subtle and quick.
Does Suicide Squad have...
Did you skip Man of Steel on purpose?
Because
I feel in my mind.
I meant to say Man of Steel instead of BVS, talking about Costner.
Yeah, well, because we both love Costner in that movie. He's like the only part of that movie that I really love. I actually, to be honest with you, everything about that movie that isn't him being Superman, I like.
Right.
All the stuff with him,
the scene of him in the bar is really awesome.
Great.
They pour it on his face and like that he has to show restraint. That and the guy pushes him and he doesn't move. That scene is awesome.
That's what I'm saying. All the scenes before he's actually
you
Superman.
Like him as Clark.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, when he's on the oil rig and he saves the guy, right? He's still Clark at that point. Mm-hmm. All the stories they're telling about this, the legend of this guy who's like this character who, you know, that's all the stuff that I like. All the stuff with him with Costner as a kid, when Costner's saying and he's like, what was I supposed to let him do? Just die?
Maybe. Yeah, I agree.
Those are all the moments in that movie that I love, and it's when it becomes the end of Wonder Woman, effectively, gods fighting each other, which in some ways I liked, in some ways I didn't like at the end of this movie, but that effect is very, very hard as a fan to watch in movies. We saw it first time, I think the original time that we saw this was in the third Matrix movie, where it's Neo, and it's basically Superman Neo. They're flying around in the air. And every time someone's tried to do it, it's like sensory overload. It's too difficult after about a minute of it to track what the hell's going on.
Yeah, it's because you can't just have them fighting in a sense of anything we can relate to. So it has to be so fantastical, but then it just falls off, which I actually liked it in this, and I was so worried that I wasn't going to. Is that is that all the moments? I feel like that's like all of them.
Yeah, I think those are the best Man of Steel moments.
And then Suicide Squad, you were saying.
I mean, is there anything in Suicide Squad that really stands out? Like, that's a really great moment?
Some, like, Harley...
I was going to say Harley.
Harley stuff. Just Margot and Will interacting, too, was strong. I don't think so, though. And actually, that's my second favorite movie in the DCEU. But
really? Yeah. You're like the only person that likes that movie, right?
Yeah. I mean, of the four that we've got so far.
Yep.
So that's kind of slim pickings. Yeah. But.
Fair enough. All right, guys, let's move on to the next section of the show. We're going to break down the profiles of these characters a little bit, where they were in their career when this movie happened. Very different places. Gal Gadot, there's not that much to say about her career to this point. She really, for the most part, before these roles we have listed here, is first known for showing up in Fast and Furious, and then she has the role in Fast 5, which was the much more seen movie of the two. Mm-hmm. She shows up, and she goes and cons our buddy. You may recognize me as the villain in a great number of action films. She goes and cons him, and she looks smoking hot in a bikini, and she's great. And she then, after that, was like, that Gal Gadot chick from the Fast and Furious, oh, she's going to be Wonder Woman. Oh, wow.
Interesting.
What else has she been in?
Yeah, my mom had no idea. My mom thought this was her first movie.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, she's been working, but...
I didn't see Keeping Up with the Joneses or Criminal. Did you see?
No.
No.
Yeah.
I know that she's like one of them. She's like Natalie Jones in Keeping Up with the Joneses. And the Criminal was just like, I can't watch... That movie is just so weird to me. It's the one with Goldman and Costner, and it just... it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's like too good of a cast to be as like irrelevant a movie as it is. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. Yeah, that's pretty much Gal Gadot, and something that I think is really interesting here, because we're going to have a conversation here in just a second about the most perfectly cast superheroes or heroes in superhero films ever. There's a whole list that is pulled here from IMDb of people that were rumored to play this role over the years. Not all like in the year leading up to this, but like when this movie was in production. So here's the names. Kate Beckinsale, Sandra Bullock, Misha Barton, Rachel Bilson, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Angelina Jolie, Jessica Biel, Ava Green, Christina Hendricks, Kristen Stewart, Olga Kurylenko, and Elodie Young.
That's why it didn't happen. Look at, you can put a year next to every single one of these of when 2009, 2006, 2004, 2010.
So
like when these people were popular.
Do you think not one of these people would be good?
Well, here's the thing. So I'm just going to say outright, as we're going to get to this list, that I think that Gal Gadot is the most perfectly cast superhero ever. I think, without even talking, she's the most perfectly cast superhero ever. She looks...
Just because she looks so...
Perfect. The way she walks, the way she... Her build, like... And then when she talks, the like naivete she has and the innocence she has,
even the accent adds to her being from somewhere else, and her face is so,
it's so charming. And the fact that she was effectively kind of a nobody before this makes it even more charming. She was exactly at the right point in her career. She's exactly at the right age as an actress where she's not a former Disney star who's 23 and getting this role. She's a 30-year-old woman who feels strong and like. But she's
a mother and like,
and she was in the Israeli army before she, like, all of these things make her just this like jaw-dropping choice. I look at this list and I think, okay, I can see Beckinsale at one point in her career, probably. I can see Angelina at some point in her career, probably.
I think I would have like offed myself if it had been Kristen Stewart.
Oh yeah,
and I had to watch her Wonder Woman. Same with Misha Barton.
These are the only two. Beckinsale and Jolie are the only two that I could even begin to consider.
Eva Green would have been on.
Eva Green would be. So my point, though,
she couldn't have actress,
what you were saying is, when
oh
you're
my
like,
god,
I don't know. Yeah.
She's the best actress on this list.
Okay.
Yeah.
Better than Angelina.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. She's killer.
Yeah, she is fantastic. When you were saying, like, do you not think they could have done it? It's not that I don't think they could have done it. I think that they were trying to do it for the wrong reason. And that, look, it's like, this list is so...
Yeah, totally.
It white. Tells exactly... It's so white, and it's also like, oh, Olga Kurylenko is the biggest person in the world right now. Kristen Stewart's the biggest person in the world right now. These people are the biggest people in the world right now. That's how we get them to watch a Wonder Woman movie. That's how we make this happen.
Misha Barton and Rachel Bilson, you're like this is not the OC, guys. Come on, like, we're not making...
But that was, like, in 2005.
Yeah.
You know, like, those were the people that you would be like, oh, yeah, they'll sell tickets. Whereas now, it's like, no, Wonder Woman sells tickets. Gal Gadot is the perfect person to be there.
Awesome at some point is Sarah Michelle Gellar, just because she is such a kick-ass female, and we've watched her be incredible. But Themyscira wouldn't have been what it was because the accent was 100% shaped around Gal, and then everybody,
so cool.
we wouldn't have had one, and it wouldn't have been the Amazonians, it would have been like the Americans.
And you have to have the accent because it just makes it just makes her more pure, you know.
So let's talk about this, guys. We're each going to throw out three people that we think are the most perfectly cast heroes in superhero films.
We all have to have Gal on our list.
So Gal's one. So two others?
Yeah.
Well, we don't have to, but we did.
Yeah, we did. But we did.
You have to.
I'm going to throw out Downey Jr. as Tony Stark. So Iron Man, if you guys watch the show, I think I talk about this sometimes, but growing up, Iron Man was my favorite hero. Through and through, I have every single Iron Man comic from 1963 through 2005. I collected them like a crazy as a kid. I was obsessed with Tony Stark. I knew all the stories. And then all of a sudden, Iron Man became popular, and my interest of like that being my thing was like, well, yeah, everybody loves Iron Man because he's the best. And I was like, no, he was a bad character that I liked before.
Mm-hmm. You got screwed.
Totally. Well, and not only that,
totally.
But you know... you guys know, I know totally. Andrew knows this, that back in the day, in the 90s, when they were talking about doing the movie, you know who was supposed to play Tony Stark?
Your boy.
TC. Mm-hmm. Cruz was rumored to play Iron Man for years, and then it didn't happen.
He actually would have been pretty good.
Yeah, it's funny, because they have that same kind of...
Yeah. You
know. Douchiness?
Yeah, no. It's no, ridiculous
charisma,
thing.
I think is the word you're looking for.
Oh, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
But Robert Downey Jr. is a flawless Tony Stark. He's perfect. As good as you could possibly ask for. He's just got it.
Absolutely. Team Iron Man.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Love you anyway, Cap.
And then my third one, and this is not exactly a superhero, but I just remember because Batman Year One is my favorite comic book.
Oh, I know exactly what you're going to say.
Gary Oldman as Commissioner Gordon is perfect. I remember seeing it for the first time, Batman Begins, and thinking, like, you literally took him off the page, and you just gave him the voice that I imagined he had. And, like, I just want to watch Batman Year One, which is kind of what Begins is a little bit, but I wanted to, like, literally see
That's
Year
One. That's
an
animated one, right?
Batman Year One?
Yeah.
They did actually make a Batman Year One animated.
Is that the one where Gordon's daughter gets killed?
No, that's Killing Joke.
Oh, okay,
well, she doesn't
right.
get killed, but she gets watched. Shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Year One right. is the Frank Miller comic. It's like the late 80s Batman origin story where he's Bruce Wayne turning. It is Batman Begins in a lot of ways, but it's just a lot more like film noir and a little bit less like superhero than Batman mm-hmm. Begins is. But in any case, yes, Oldman as Gordon is just amazing. He looks and sounds exactly the way I always imagined.
Yeah, he steals the screen by being so normal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Giving
his coat.
Yeah.
Andrew, are you next or am I next?
I'll go next.
Okay.
Yeah. So mine, I have Gal, obviously, because she's incredible. I almost want to say Henry Cavill, because we said it a little bit, because he just looks like Clark and Superman.
Yeah.
But my three are Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool, because his humor and his comedy is just like his assholishness is so perfect. And
what a risk it was to put him in another superhero movie.
Exactly. And the fact that he pulled it off and it was fantastic was refreshing, to mm-hmm. say the least. And then Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. He's always been so great as Wolverine because he's kind of been an asshole. Even when he had the quick cameo in the first class movie, he's like, fuck off.
Yeah, right.
You're like, only Hugh Jackman would be...
Could do that.
Yeah.
His look. It's like, just his look.
His look and his hair and his face. And then Logan just made me just completely fall in love.
It's one of my favorite movies. Yeah. I love Logan so
Both
much.
I love it so much.
Do you medium
it's,
on
no,
it?
No, it's good.
It's good.
It's a good movie. I really liked it. Okay, for me, this is... For two completely different reasons. I'm not even talking about Gal because we've already talked about it. So for two very different reasons, these are the best cast in my mind. Number one would be Christopher Reeve because I feel like not only was he a perfect Superman, but he has made it so challenging for any Superman from there on out because he's just what you picture.
I feel so bad for Brandon Routh.
And then I know. yeah, I do.
Too.
But
he was good.
He's awesome as Adam on Legends and stuff, so I don't feel that bad for him anymore. But I think that this made it impossible. Like, this is what people picture. And then who he is in real life. Like, everybody just loves him and won't let it go. And that's Superman and always will be. And he was so hard to cast because there's so much source material. So
and
they nailed
tragic
it.
Figure,
and the stories about Reeves and Williams talking to each other are so beautiful.
Because
they were, like, best friends. Yeah.
Yes.
It's really cool.
And then for the exact opposite reason, the other person I think was the best casting was Chris Pratt as Star-Lord because... There was no expectation going in. You had to completely create this. Obviously, mm-hmm. there is source material, but nobody knows it. Well, some people knew it, but
right.
most people didn't.
Yeah.
And without him, this movie fails.
Yep.
And also, we covered it on the show 2 weeks ago, and the director was like, I don't care if he's fat. We'll CGI him to skinny. He's that perfect for this role.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
like,
right.
when does a fat guy ever get to be a superhero?
And I think it's crazy that, like, because I grew up, I've watched Parks and Rec every single episode. I like love that show, and I could never ever have been like, yes, this is going to be our next leading man. And for somebody to have that vision, that's a huge deal.
And work.
I mean, Pratt is pretty amazing. It actually brings me to another segment that I wanted to talk about, and we're going to get to it after we talk about Chris Pine's career here. So
incredible career right now.
Yeah, Chris Pine's definitely killing it at the moment. A lot of people remember him from what is it, the Nanny Diaries?
This Means War.
No, that's later. The early, it's not the Nanny Diaries. It's the old...
I know what you're talking about.
What are you talking about?
He shows up as like a heartthrob kind of...
Yeah, from a long time ago. The Anne Hathaway movie.
Oh.
Princess Diaries?
Is it the Princess Diaries?
Oh.
Is he the prince?
He's in one of those movies. Like,
I think he's the prince.
I think it's the Princess Diaries. Yeah,
yeah.
He shows up in one of these movies that everybody.
I love that movie. I don't even remember.
That everybody always talks about. Oh, he was that guy before he was, you know, the other guy. And that's something you hear a lot. His last couple years, though, I mean, this film, Star Trek Beyond in 2016.
Yeah, Princess Diaries.
Yeah, Princess Diaries. Yeah. Hell or High Water in 2016, and Finest Hours. Now, I didn't see Finest Hours.
Oh my God, he was in Just My Luck too with Lindsay Lohan when she was having really bad luck all day.
Yeah,
that movie is a tough watch.
Finest Hours, I didn't see. I've heard it's quite good, but it's not remarkable. Hell or High Water was amazing. That movie was really, really, really good, and he's great in it.
Well, it's just the second one.
He's not in Princess Diaries. He's in Princess Diaries 2.
That's what it is. Yeah, that's why it's one of those movies that everybody's always like, oh, he was in this thing.
Hmm. Oh, The Finest Hours looked interesting.
It's a good cast. I just haven't watched it.
Yeah.
And then Star Trek Beyond. So definitely Chris Pine had a very interesting, like, Star Trek. And then Unstoppable came out the next year, and it was like, and then This Means War, and he has a few years there.
So good.
Is it really?
I love that movie.
You're the only person in the world. Tom Hardy.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's like a DC love. I love them. So good.
So, but he had a few years where, like, no one really gave a shit about Chris Pine aside from the Star Trek movies. He kind of was just irrelevant.
Like when he did Unstoppable?
No, that's the year after. That's 2009.
I know.
Just I mean, that's
2010, Unstoppable.
Yeah, that's the follow-up to Star Trek. It's literally the next 3 or 4 years.
Well, that's the thing about Chris Pine is it you always kind of feel like no one really cares about Chris Pine.
Until now.
But it's even still in a different way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, people lose their shit. Oh, so we're about to do a segment where we're going to be ranking our Chris's. And we have Pine, Pratt, Evans, and Hemsworth. And even despite this massive success of Pine, I always feel like these other three guys, they have more of like this weird following behind them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, each one of these guys has a very, very specific appeal. So let's get straight into it, guys. Right now, we are going to spend the next few minutes ranking the four Chris's, the conversation. Who's the best Chris? Chris Pine, Chris Hemsworth, Chris Evans, and Chris Pratt. There's, I think, strengths and weaknesses to each one. Hang with us as we break the thing down for you right now. So, I think you can make an argument for any one of the four Chris's. And I think there's different categories. So let's start. I want to hear just like each of our four lists, but I'm going to kind of just explain where I think sort of this starts and stops, which is that there's four white guys that are in superhero movies that are all super charming. Like, that's, I think that, like, we can all agree
they're
these
all
guys.
Charming, they're all good looking. Yeah.
They've got that brownie, mousy hair color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, the first thing is movie star charisma, which is something we talk about on the show all the time. You really can't be a proper A-list movie star unless you have that movie star charisma, which is that, like, you can make a joke and everybody's like, ah, the handsome guy made me laugh. It's like, it just works. And, like, all the great movie stars have that movie star charisma. I think it's safe to say that all four of these guys have it, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, so then, and next up, you've got like...
Andrew's so bitter about that.
Next up, you have the hunkiness, right? They're all super handsome dudes. Great,
hubba hubba.
Great bods. I think we can probably discuss and dissect their bods if we want to, but I won't go there yet. And then, last but not least, you have actual acting ability, chops. I mean, you have roles, but they've all got pretty sick roles, so like...
Yeah, they've all had pretty great roles.
Yeah, and that's less about... They don't get to decide that. That's what they get cast for. So, actual acting ability in the roles given to them. And I'm going to jump in and say, I think outright that Chris Pine is the best of the four. I go Chris Pine 1, Chris Evans 2, Chris Hemsworth 3, and I hate to say it because I love him, but Chris Pratt 4.
I just feel like that's so crazy, man. I mean, like, you haven't even seen Black Hat.
True.
You haven't seen Rush.
True.
And, like, you don't like Thor that much.
Yeah, I just... The issue is that, like...
Why?
I know it's close for me. It's the fact that even though I love Chris Pratt, and I do, I think he's funnier than the other guys, by far. I love Star-Lord. I think it's a great role. He doesn't show me as much. He doesn't give me much more than, like, movie star charisma and comedy. Mm-hmm. He's, like, a great... He's like Star-Lord's a great character for him, but take away Star-Lord from that guy... And I haven't seen anything.
Yeah, you got Jurassic World.
I didn't watch Parks and Rec. I know. People love him in that.
Let's pause at Jurassic World. Because when was the last time I was on the show?
You're the only person in existence that likes that movie.
Love that movie.
Yeah.
Regardless of if you like the movie or not, did he do an amazing job?
He's great.
We've said that. He's the best part of that.
I love all the Chris's. How can you not love the Chris's? Also, and then let's just use the other categories here. From a bod perspective, Pratt's in the second half of this. I think we can all agree that Evans and Hemsworth take the cake with bods.
Yeah, because Pine's a little older now.
Yeah, but Pine...
What are you talking about?
He's like a different type of bod.
Yeah, but Pine also, that's one of the things I like so much about Chris Pine.
Did you see him holding his wee-wee?
No, I did, and that's a great body. Mm-hmm. But it's a different kind of body. He's not as, he would have been more jacked than that if he could have been, I think.
Really? More jacked is not necessarily
You think he was
better.
Going for more of a normal
Pratt
body?
Pratt has the best body.
Yeah.
You,
he's a spy.
My friend, have no idea about these bods. They're all great.
I think Evan's got the best body.
Because he's a spy.
He does have a great body.
I think Hemsworth has the best body because he's the tallest, right? He's like the broadest. Maybe it's, we just have different...
Depends on your opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Roxy,
flavors here.
Rank your bods, then rank your four.
I can't rank the bods. I will not do that to my Chris's.
Okay.
I love all of
them. You're not
going to
objectify the Chris's?
No, I'm not going to objectify the Chris's. Okay, so
that's
my...
Very, very strong.
I'm
going to
go the opposite way.
Okay.
My number four spot is Hemsworth,
yep.
Who is...
Garbage.
Who is good, who I like a lot.
Stop it, Andrew.
Who is good, who I like a lot, who I think is not my favorite Chris and not my favorite Hemsworth. After him...
I feel like Hemsworth's the ugly duckling, let's just be honest. In all of the rankings, I feel like he gets the shaft. Or do some people love him the most?
Oh, I definitely think... People love Thor. Are you kidding me? And he probably is working off the most iconic of the characters. No, Cap.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Second most iconic. So, okay. So after him, I go Chris Evans, which pains me that he's at number three because I adore him.
Yeah,
he's a Bostonian. I've actually met him. He's a doll face. I think he's incredible. And I'm sad that he's this far down on the list. But he has to be because Chris Pine... takes number two, and after watching this movie multiple times, and of course my love of This Means War, which I'm not kidding about, I think that movie is phenomenal.
You are single-handedly going to make me watch that movie.
It's so good, and him in Star Trek, it's like those,
yeah,
he's so great, and he's charming, and I think he's wonderful. My number one is Chris Pratt, which,
he's
so
super lovable.
We're on opposite ends of the spectrum here, but it's not just that he's lovable, it's that I think that he is the most like moldable.
Yeah,
I think that he could play the most kinds of roles, and that he can be.
It's
like
almost as
goofy.
If he was like a thing of dough, and they molded him into steel,
or he was made from clay.
Yes, the same thing.
Well, I was thinking Wonder Woman, but he's not. So yeah, he's my first, and I think he's also the funniest, and I think that he is. Yeah, love him and his bod.
And his bod.
And his bod.
Andrew, feel free to rank the bods first if you'd like, and then I'd like to hear your rankings.
All right, I'll do bods. I think bods is almost my list backwards, so I'm going to go Hemsworth, Evans...
Can we get them up there?
Pine, and then Pratt.
Can
I think Pratt has the worst bod, and then Pine, but I like Pine because he, like... It's his choice. I think
we all know the Star-Lord shot when he's covered in orange is going to be the Pratt shot.
Right.
I think probably the Evans shot when he first comes out of the tank in Captain America is probably the Evans shot.
Anything with Chris Hemsworth doing anything without a shirt on in any movie he's in.
Yeah, Hemsworth's pretty jacked like all the time. And then Pine. Probably like, Pine's
get out of here with Pratt's body.
It's like,
isn't
it's
incredible.
Evan, it's like Pat, these
Please
guys
pull
have been,
up Chris Pratt's body.
These
for
guys
me.
Have been training and shaping their bodies for like decades. Evans is, I mean, Pratt's been on it for like a 2-year kick.
Yeah.
Yeah, but do you guys follow Pratt on the gram?
I know. No.
Okay, because Pratt's the goofiest, and he shows off his body with his BFF from The Office, and they do, like, the Ice Bucket Challenge and all these great challenges, and they run miles and stuff for vets and do all these things, and his bod is sick.
He's got a sick bod. Like, they've all got sick bods. Okay,
sick
get off my back. So what's your actual ranking?
All right, my actual ranking is Chris Hemsworth at fourth, because I just don't like Chris Hemsworth that much.
You just
hate
the Hemsworth family.
No, here's what it is. I just need something. I need to watch Rush. I need to watch Black Hat. I need to watch something to where I watch you and you blow me away. Because I actually really liked him in Ghostbusters. I think he's hilarious in it. And then Evans. I like that he makes fun of himself in another teen movie. I think he's a great Captain America. And I think he's a good actor, like in Snowpiercer. And,
yeah.
So good. oh, that movie was amazing.
I put Pratt at second because I think it's a combination of what you guys both said. In the sense of, like, he has such a big career ahead of him, and he is very moldable. And the fact that the dude could get fat again and be a comedic actor, whereas if these guys got fat, it would be really hard for their careers to rebound, I think.
To be totally fair to anybody who's watching this who's, like, worried about any body shaming, by no means was he ever actually a fat person.
No,
like,
no. Definitely not.
He was, like, doughier and not a superhero body.
Look, we're making jokes.
Yeah,
I'm making jokes, and I'm speaking in terms of Hollywood. And this is, like, it is a very real thing.
There's
and
a
like,
clear standard for what gets cast as a superhero.
But, and if you did watch Parks and Rec, it was pointed out multiple times about his size. And I think something like we've watched what happened with Jonah Hill, it's hard to go either way. It's hard to go from being
Absolutely.
A little doughier to being somebody like, oh, can he be a leading male? Or for being the comedic relief. And I think that the fact that he could do both has less to do with his body and more to do with his chops.
Yeah, he is a very good actor. Like, I mean, not a very good actor. He's a very charismatic actor.
Yeah.
And he's fun to watch. I need to see him do... We talked about this on Guardians Volume 2. I need to see him do some really, really heavy dramatic stuff to, like, really win me over. Chris Pine is a guy that, it's like I almost didn't want to like him because he was too pretty and he was like too generic white boy and he was getting all these amazing roles, but he deserves it, I think. I think he's a really talented actor.
Super talented.
I was really blown away by him in this movie. I love him in Star Trek. I love him as Kirk.
In Unstoppable? You love him in Unstoppable?
Unstoppable. Yeah, so that's my ranking is Pine, Pratt, Evans, and Hemsworth.
I just think the reason Evans gets to be so high for me, because he was 3 for you, right? Or was he 2 for you, Rock?
It's 3 for me, which I'm really, really upset about.
The reason I put Evans at 2 for me is that I really feel like Evans has been the one that's impressed me the most with his longevity in his career, because
he's been around for the longest,
he's stuck around, and the fact that he survived a really bad superhero franchise in a prime role, swung back around into movies that I love, like Sunshine.
What am I thinking about?
What? Fantastic Four.
Oh my God,
he's Johnny Storm. You forgot, right?
He was the flamer.
He managed to come back from that.
Because he wasn't the problem with that film.
No.
But he shows up in Sunshine. He shows up in all these movies that I really liked as he gets older. And anyway, long story short, that's our ranking the Chris's segment. Guys, tweet at us with the hashtag #PickYourChris.
Nice.
And and tweet at us. Let us know what you think. I'd love to know your ranking personally of your favorite Chris. Let's move into the production development of this film. Did you have something else you wanted to add, Rox?
I have some Chris honorable mentions.
Oh, please.
Oh, yeah, please.
So this actor named Chris Sullivan, who you guys would know because he was Taserface just recently in Guardians. Here's why he's so amazing and he's the next Chris to look out for. Because, well, while he might not be necessarily as dreamy as the other ones, he's white, so he fits in the Chris category.
Yep, yep.
And he also is very, very, can play all these different roles because he's the lead guy on This Is Us right now. And he was also Benny in Stranger Things. And he looks so different in all three of those roles. And he's a Chris to look out for. And then Chris Cornell, who I wanted to give a shout out to because he was on the soundtrack for both Avengers and Man of Steel.
Big shout out. R.I.P.
Wait, those are my Chris honorable mentions.
Who's Benny again?
Benny in Stranger Things, the one where she goes to the diner and he's talking to her and then he ends up.
Oh.
Spoiler alert.
God, I love that show.
Oh, got it.
It's really good. Yeah. He's my shout out because they both were superhero related. So I'm giving them honorable mentions.
All right, guys, we are going to speed through production notes here so we can get to the second half of the episode. We're going to talk first.
We use the restroom. Yeah. You guys do this.
Yeah, be my guest. We're going to talk first about the writers of the films. Of the film, there's three of them. There's Jason Fuchs, there is Zack Snyder, and there is finally, where's my thing? I'm missing my notes.
I missed what you just said.
We were talking about
to help you.
Who wrote the film. Alan Heinberg, Jason Fuchs, and Zack Snyder. So I will run through each of them. Jason Fuchs, a personal friend of ours. Somebody that we like a lot. He's a super, super great dude.
Yep.
He's an actor. He was just in La La Land as the writer at the party. He wrote Pan before this film, and his very first movie, his first feature-length script was Rags, the 2012 Nickelodeon movie, and then he is attached right now to be writing the Minecraft movie, as well as a film with Tom Cruise called Luna Park, directed by Doug Liman.
It was strange with him on this project because he was slated to write the film, and then he was pulled from the film.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how that all happened, and he was supposed to be writing a couple different things potentially in this universe. So it was weird because I've kept up with him obviously on social media and we are friendly with him and he's so proud of this movie. So I wonder if it was just they were bringing in somebody else or how exactly we came to be.
I think he did a draft of the script at the beginning, and then I think what happens with a lot of these films, which is why when you look often at the script breakdowns for these, there's usually 3 or 4 writers. Sometimes you'll see one, sometimes two, but having 3 or 4 writers is not super surprising, especially considering Alan Heinberg and Zack Snyder. Snyder was going to be involved as a writer, I think, kind of no matter what.
Yeah, of course.
And so he gets that credit. We don't really have to go into Snyder too much, but Alan Heinberg is somebody who is originally most well known in my world for having been the major writer on the OC. That's like where he's from. He also worked on everything from Grey's Anatomy to Party of Five. And then he wrote a comic book called The Young Avengers, which in like the mid-2000s, I remember reading it when it came out because I love the OC. I was working at Meltdown Comics here in 2005, and he would come in every week. It's when that comic was new, and I met him. Really nice guy. And Young Avengers is just a great, great book. It's like the 4 young versions of these Avengers. 2 of them are gay. It was an innovative book at the time. Great, great artist as well, whose name I can't even remember. I used to love him, though.
It is strange to me how little credit he seems to be getting on this film.
Yeah, right?
It's Patty Jenkins, Patty Jenkins, Patty Jenkins, Patty Jenkins. And I feel like the story is actually pretty incredible.
Really good story.
Which people aren't talking about very much.
Well, he also wrote the reboot of the Wonder Woman comic book series, which is where he gets the credit for this project.
So I just wonder why people aren't talking about the script more.
I would agree. I would totally agree. So that's the writers on the film. The director, Patty Jenkins, we talked about quite a bit. Really, aside from the two movies, Monster and this film, she has some TV credits. She has a small number of TV credits, like maybe like 8 or 9 of them over the years. Mm-hmm. She's done 2 episodes here, 1 episode here. She did direct the pilot for the TV show The Killing, which got a lot of press. She got, I think, some award nominations for that. And but yeah, she's a bizarrely quiet career for somebody as impressive as she is. I find it surprising that she just hasn't worked more.
Like, she's turned down a lot of projects, which because she is picky, which I guess she should be. But I do think it's interesting because this film, because Warner Brothers knew they wanted a female director, and there just are so few that are working, which is really upsetting, but is true, that it's like when people say, who should we go with? You think, okay, if you're not going to go with Kathryn Bigelow, like, who are we working with? What do we have?
Blow up this graphic on the screen here for me if we can. This is a list of 10 of the highest grossing female directors and their adjusted gross on the films that they directed. It's a little small for me to read right now.
Anthony,
so
can you zoom in on that?
I literally
can't
see a word.
Yeah, I'm just a little bit blind. We're all blind.
We're all old.
But I think it's interesting because she had TV credits, like I was talking about with Michelle McLaren.
Yeah.
Because that's what they went to. Like, what are the cinematic television shows? Have you directed Game of Thrones? Have you directed Breaking Bad? What have you directed?
So, you got Nora Ephron. You've got Betty Thomas. Nancy Myers is a huge one. Amy Heckerling. You've got...
what are the dates next to those?
Yeah, 2003, there's one. 99, 2000. Yeah, 98. Brenda Chapman. Penelope Spheeris is another one that I know well. Penny Marshall. Catherine Hardwick is another
Penny
big name
Marshall.
That comes up. It certainly... By no means is it a... It's not a large list. It's not a list of, like, a crazy huge list of names. This is just, like, this happens to be the women that made the most money.
It's small, but there are female directors out there, because I know a lot of studios say, like, well, there aren't any women that can direct this, and that's why we went with the man, because it's the best person for the job. And it's like, well...
Right.
Which is horseshit.
Yeah, of course
it's always horseshit.
Of course it is, but it is nice that they did push so hard for this.
Absolutely.
I don't think it would have been received even close to the same light if there was a male director.
Yeah.
It would have been a different movie.
Completely different.
Yeah.
And a lot of the directors that had been talked about to direct the film were male through the years, and then they finally decided to give a female director the shot at doing the movie, which is 100% the right decision.
So awesome.
Producers on this film, you have Charles Roven, Deborah Snyder, Zack Snyder, and Richard Suckle. Richard Suckle, best known for American Hustle, Scooby-Doo. He's attached to... Justice League, I believe, and he's done a bunch of stuff. He's
Flash, right? He's doing that.
That's what it is. Flash, not Justice League. Mm. You have Zack Snyder and Deborah Snyder. Deborah produces exclusively films with Zack Snyder. They have a company called Cruel and Unusual Films. They've produced pretty much all of his films together since 2004. Zack Snyder came on the scene directing music videos, and then Dawn of the Dead, 300, Watchmen, and now he's a fixture in this universe. He did just step down from Justice League due to a personal tragedy.
Yes, our condolences.
Yep. And then last up, you have Charles Roven, who was formerly a little bit more involved. He's a little bit like in more of sort of an overarching role now.
He's a DC god.
But but he's basically the guy that oversees everything. Him and Geoff Johns, as you said, kind of do everything. And he comes, I believe Charles Roven comes from an actual entertainment background, where Geoff Johns was just a comic book writer who just came up the ranks. That guy wrote years
everything.
Of essential comic book stories in the DC universe. Really, when DC was finding its footing in the early to mid 2000s, when they were becoming... For a long time, it was always that Marvel had better characters, but DC had made movies. It's basically what it was.
Right.
It was that Marvel had cooler characters, but DC had been more iconic because they had Batman and Superman, and those movies had movies. And in the 2000s, it became Marvel was trying to make movies, and so then DC was like, we need to have better storylines, better arcs that people enjoy. And Geoff Johns is 100% the guy that was at the forefront of that movement. And now the storytelling is a lot more kind of on an even playing field. Characters like Green Lantern and The Flash became much more relevant with him writing those stories.
Do you think The Flash would be cool?
I don't really know. What do you think?
It's the hardest one right now because it's moved on the slate 1,000 times. Mm-hmm. We've changed directors. We've changed writers. I know that if Zemeckis attaches himself to the project, which is what seems to be right now, that it will be awesome.
Right. Yeah, Zemeckis.
Do you think that, like, the fact that it's been like a pretty popular TV show, that it like takes away from the film, or does it add to, like, do you think too many people are going to have too many predetermined like expectations because of the TV show?
I think the fact that they announced Ezra Miller so early was like, you guys have a few years to prep for the fact that this isn't Grant Gustin, get used to it. And it will be a different take. That his suit is different, it's a little more robotic, and we'll see how he interacts. And I think it will probably be a pretty Flash/Cyborg heavy movie, and we'll see how that duo because we don't have Cyborg on the show.
Well, also, let's just be honest. Like, I mean, people watch CW TV shows. People watch feature films. So, like, yeah. that's going to... Flash the movie is going to get seen by half the world, and Flash the TV show gets seen by millions and millions of people. It's, right. it's kind of a different animal, I think. So once the movie comes out, that'll rewrite who Flash is for pretty much everybody, I think.
You two talking about comic books and Marvel and DC is just hilarious, because I am you guys are like up here and I'm like way down here.
She's like in it. Yeah, she knows it's so every impressive. Week. I just have like my growing up knowledge.
Yeah. I know nothing.
I talk about the show every week yeah. for the last 2 years, so yeah. luckily I know a little bit.
So moving on to box office and critical, this is the triumph, right? This is what Huge. Everyone is so happy and so excited to see. Warner Brothers took this movie on. It cost $149 million to make, which I think is a very, very reasonable budget for this type of film.
Yeah, and much less than what they're spending on BVS, so.
Yeah, yeah, and the Infinity War movies, you know, $500 million each.
It's nice that they spent 150, that they didn't say it's a female character movie, let's spend 85, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad that they spent a real amount of money on this movie.
It's a lot of money.
They would have been slaughtered.
Yeah. It opened June 2nd, as we all know, a couple weeks ago. It has grossed $205 million domestic, $230 million worldwide, for a grand total of almost $500 million at $435 million, and I'm sure there's been a few more million added since last night when I did this.
This will cross $600 million by the end for sure.
Yeah, and it's
you think it'll cross $600 million?
I think so.
I'm hoping that we hit 800.
Oh. I was just thinking, because we're already going into week three.
I know.
It was week... So it opened at number one at $103 million, and I think this last week it was still number one at over $100 million, I believe.
Oh, yeah. It had the small... Percentage-wise, it had the smallest drop-off of any film, any superhero film to date.
The fact that Suicide Squad, though, crossed 700, I would have to think that this movie could do it.
You would hope so.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it could be. Maybe this will have, like, much, much better replay
I was definitely value. Way more excited to watch Suicide Squad than I was to watch Wonder Woman, though.
You
in
were?
In the beginning.
Yeah. And then, I was actually really skeptical about Wonder Woman, and I really wanted it to be a good film. I just didn't think it was going to be, and I didn't really, and I think I disliked BVS so much, and I felt like she was kind of forced into it. I don't know, I was really skeptical.
Yeah, I think...
Really nervous.
We're definitely at that point, I think, as an audience, where we're like Zack Snyder slow-mo overload. We're just like, I don't want to see any more of it. I'm sick of it. And unfortunately, I heard the hype on this movie a year ago, 9 months ago, was that this was going to be bad. Like, people that had seen cuts of it or had seen pieces of it, critics were saying, I think it's a mess. It's not coming together. And it's just funny how the narrative works behind the scenes. Sometimes people are just wrong.
Patty Jenkins talked a lot about that.
Yeah.
She was like, I had no idea where the leaks were coming from, but I was just like, well, you're wrong.
Yeah,
it's not going to be bad, so...
She tried to keep her head down a lot while making it, and just the sense of, like, I'm doing my thing. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Nothing can get in my fucking way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's...
People are always trying to.
Yeah, the behind the scenes, all the leaks about this movie, and I think that when that first trailer dropped, whatever it was, a year ago, less than a year ago at some point, when the first one dropped, because we were kind of in the wake of all of the BVS and Suicide Squad was terrible stuff, it was very much like, I don't want to see any more slow-mo, awesome music stuff of this. Like, I just don't care.
Yeah.
It's going to have to be so good to impress me. Because you've shown me this trailer, and that's what it looks like it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So moving on to critical, and they were wrong, and we were happy. It got an 8.2 on IMDb. It's in the top 250 already at number 229. I imagine it'll break the top 200 pretty soon, and I think it'll live there forever. I really do think this movie will always be on the top 250. Rotten Tomatoes, the scores, it doesn't really follow our equation, but it's because the scores are basically the same. It's got a 93% by all critics, 92% by top, and another 92% by the audience.
Which is significantly better than the 26% that was previously gotten, so...
Yes.
And The Mummy got 17% the same weekend.
Just unbelievable.
The second weekend.
Yeah.
It's still crazy that movie still somehow managed to make $200 million worldwide.
The Mummy?
Yeah.
Yes,
with how bad it is.
It's just international. People, Tom Cruise.
Yeah. But yeah, this
the
getting a 90...
biggest.
Movie
star,
yeah,
currently
93, moving on 92. Those feel very right. I almost feel like they're almost a little low. I want to give this movie like a 96.
Yeah, I think it's actually better than a 92, to be honest.
Yeah.
No, I take that back, because I think the ending is not as good as it could be, which brings it into like the 92.
Okay, is that because of Ares? Is that a lot of people complain about?
Yeah, I just don't think it has a great villain, and I think that. Ultimately, the ending does get a little bit into the slow-mo gods fighting stuff. But
I loved watching all that metal come to him and him go like this. Yeah, right. So badass.
See that? Okay, so that's what I want to say, and I know that we're running really long here. I hate that we always talk about this, gods fighting gods. It's too fantastic, but I actually really loved... I was shocked at how well they did Ares, because he needed to be...
so powerful that literally he just controls. He's a god. He can turn anything into a weapon. He can control everything, and that's what I liked. In other movies, when gods battle, it always feels like there's still some sort of limitation. On this one, it felt like the only limitation was like what they could create in their mind.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I thought that was pretty cool, and I thought the dude was kind of a badass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. All right, guys, let's get into favorite line. Let's just run off our favorite lines. I think you talked about yours earlier pretty much. It's that sequence, right?
Yeah, it's I wish we had more time. That's my favorite line.
And I hate to say it, but I kind of feel like my favorite line has to come from the same sequence. I don't know if it's necessarily I wish we had more time. I think it's the other one you were talking about. You save the world, because it is definitely, or no, I take it back. It's her line about when she goes into no man's land. This is what I'm going
to do. This is what I'm
going to do. Yeah, that has to be my favorite.
Yeah.
It has to be my favorite.
My favorite line is actually not a Gal line. It's a Chris line, and I think it's because it embodies the movie so well. He says, my father once told me once, if you see something wrong happening in the world, you can either do nothing or you can do something, and I already tried nothing.
Yeah, you know what?
Breaking that down was like, yes, and watching him say that and having her kind of learn by that and be like, all right, and her be such a quick learner and also curious, like, what did he do? What was nothing? What did that look like? And
try to desert or
that line was so strong.
That, you know, God, Rox, you're so good.
That line was
so
good, right?
Good, babe. Yeah, because that I remember when that line happened. It was like I wanted to write that down.
Yeah, right.
It was that good, and I think that also adds to why I think Chris Pine is so fantastic. Even the Star Trek line we always talk about is, why are you talking to me, man?
Yeah, right.
You know, but that line too. You know how many actors? You know how hard it was to be as an actor, and you're an actress, to get that line and deliver it with the subtle, like, the grace that he does it with.
Yeah, so that it's memorable.
Being like, my dad told me this, and I already tried nothing.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's like, no, dude.
Like, not feisty. It's like...
Yeah, it's very subtle, and it's like, and it's exactly what you're saying. You're like, well, what did you try to do?
Pine,
curious.
Pine's the perfect actor for that line. He just, like, that's how he...
It was good.
Yeah, exactly. He's perfect for that. So, anyway, guys, we are going to get into the last bit of the show here, which is that there are three action movie categories. Totally ridiculous, totally legitimate, ridiculously legitimate. Without even explaining what they are, this movie is totally legit.
Yeah, it's 100%. Totally.
Yeah,
I don't even think it's a conversation.
No,
right?
Because if you're in a world where gods exist, this is perfect.
Yeah, this doesn't make you laugh unintentionally. It's just awesome through and through. It makes you feel. Mm-hmm. So, guys, there's only one thing left on the show, and that's going to be called The Pitch. Yeah, right. Didn't see that coming, did you?
I guess not.
I like how you and I enjoy that, and our guests are always just like, it's not, it's really weird.
I thought it was
really
cool.
He does the Panther growl. So, guys, we're going to be doing The Mummy next week with Tom Cruise. Aren't you excited?
You want to come back, Rox?
Oh, yeah.
The Mummy, guys, or how can you not be excited? It's a Tom Cruise show. We get Cruise in theaters. Even if the movie's bad, we're still going to get some great running. So, we're going to talk about that next week. Come back, same time, same place, next week on Wednesday. Where can the folks find you guys if they want to follow along?
You guys can find me everywhere at Roxy Stryer. Thanks so much for having me join.
Thank you so much for coming back. You're so amazing, Rox.
You're great, Rox.
I love you, babe.
Love you, babe.
Awesome. Awesome.
I also love you.
Yeah.
How's the sweat going?
I was doing okay today. Yeah, okay. I think I've been drinking a little bit this weekend.
All right.
You guys can find me everywhere at Andrew Guy, Instagram, Twitter, and then you can also look out for us on the Movie Trivia Schmodown. We'll be making an appearance real soon for our third match.
June 20th, I think, is when we go back up for that. Tuesday, June 20th. So that's real, real exciting. There's a lot of good things coming up on Movie Trivia Schmodown. I think DC Movie News is competing pretty soon as well. I mean, but... The DC team.
We got to do the whole show.
We've been told we're not
now.
Supposed to talk about this.
Okay, gotcha.
So we don't know anything about it.
Yeah, we don't know anything about
that right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just hearing rumors. So anyway, guys, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. We'll see you same time, same place next week. Have an awesome day.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.